Hey guys, welcome back to the show. My name is Lauren and this is Liam.
Hello.
We've got a really fun show for you guys today. A little bit of a, I don't know, maybe headache-inducing one because these are some interesting topics. First off, we're going to be talking about how the Democratic presidential hopefuls are more and more capitulating to the Alphabet Mafia, also known as the LGBT lobby. Then Gina Rodriguez, who is an actress, recently essentially broke the internet by singing along to a song with the N-word. Then Project Veritas has exposed CNN in a series of very delicious insider clips. And finally, AOC was recently crying over the prospect of motherhood in the era of climate change. It's going to be a great Wednesday night. Before we get into that, though, I do have a really quick message from our sponsors over at Cabbage, lovely people. You see, managing inventory, covering payroll, doing 100 other things before lunch is just an average day when you own a small business. Your time is valuable, and getting the money you need shouldn't take up all of it. That's why Cabbage created a simple, modern way for businesses to access up to $250,000 worth of credit. So we were independent when we started making these videos, so I think we know more than anybody how much financing can play a role in getting your business up and running, and also how frustrating it can be to deal with. That's why Cabbage makes it really easier than ever. And with Cabbage's application process, it's online. It takes just minutes to complete and get a decision, so you don't have to go to any intimidating meetings that would make this whole process even more anxiety-inducing. If your business qualifies, you can access the amount you need right away and withdraw more funds whenever you need extra capital. Cabbage has an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and has provided over 200,000 small businesses with access to funding. So if you want the money you need to run your small business today, you can go to cabbage.com and use the code Lauren to get a credit of $100 on your first loan statement. That's K-A-B-B-A-G-E.com. Small disclaimer, the offer ends November 30th. You must take a minimum $5,000 loan to qualify. Credit lines subject to review and change. Individual requests for capital are separate installment loans issued by Celtic Bank, member FDIC. And also, big thank you to our live viewers here. And we want to remind you all, if you are watching live, we will be going through Super Chats about an hour into the stream. So any comments, questions, concerns, we'd love to hear them. Okay, now that that business is out of the way, Alphabet Mafia, did you know that today is National Pronoun Day?
I didn't. And I can't say that I feel any better now that I do know that it is National Pronoun Day.
It is National Pronoun Day. Let's say it's October 16th for anyone who's watching this on a different day. And so from what I gather, it's a day where you come out and you say your pronouns. You're just like, hey, he, him, that's me. Here's what the LGBT Foundation has to say about it. Apparently there's an LGBT Foundation. They're the gay foundation. Never heard of them before, but they said on Twitter, "Happy International Pronouns Day. Today is a chance for us to make respecting, sharing, and educating about personal pronouns more commonplace. Referring to people by the pronouns they determine for themselves is basic to human dignity." I'm someone who I very strongly believe that no matter how you identify, whatever, like you should be treated with respect if we're friends and things like that. But I feel like this whole thing of equating respect to pronouns is pretty new, right? That's not.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like probably in the last 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, right? like 10 years
very
ago.
Very recent.
I hadn't heard anything about this. And like we're at a point now, which happened very quickly, it seems, where now it's become a marker of human dignity, not just I would like it if you did this.
Right.
Full on human dignity.
It is crazy. And we've talked about this before, but like how much those slippery slope arguments back in like the mid-2000s turned out to be pretty on the nose, right? Because I would never, this is something that like was 10 years ago, this was literally like a meme to make fun of people on the left, right? Yeah. That's what they would say, you know, like, but it's actually serious. At this point, and it's not only is it serious, it's actually affecting people's lives that don't want to get on board with it.
Mm-hmm. And right? That's so true. I mean, I feel like we're at a point now where every slippery slope argument people were thinking of 10 years ago, even some we could never have imagined because it's just so crazy, that's become a thing now. I mean, we have people advocating for Two-Spirit to be included in like the LGBT alphabet. And like you said, it's not like these are just Tumblr weirdos that we're talking about who want the pronouns pushed. Because I know when we started making videos about all this gender stuff, there were people who said, who cares? Leave it alone. Aren't there real issues to talk about? Now we're at a point which what the segment is going to be covering, about how this craziness is actually seeping into mainstream politics. Okay, so if you think this isn't a big deal, something worth talking about it, you're very mistaken. Because if you're in the UK, apparently, and you're not down with all this pronoun usage, whatever, apparently you're going to be at odds with the police there. We have this clip that was shared on social media. There's a specific LGBT UK police account, because you know never mind stabbings and all the like the gang raping, just this, the pronouns is what we need to focus on. They released this video in honor of National Pronoun Day.
Today is International Pronouns Day, which is a day particularly important to people who identify as transgender or gender non-conforming. Being misgendered can have a huge impact on somebody and their personal well-being. It also can be used as a form of abuse for somebody, and that just isn't right. Today is about raising awareness, getting people to have conversations, and understanding why it is so important to understand the pronouns that somebody wishes to be used for them. Have a good day.
Yeah, it's 2019. Fun place to...
That's depressing,
honestly. To be around.
But then again, like, we were, I think, where were we? We were in Nova Scotia, I think it was, and they had rainbow flags on, like, police cars, if
yeah,
I'm not mistaken, right? Painted onto.
And that's, like, Nova Scotia, which, if you're not Canadian, Nova Scotia is not a California or New York equivalent.
No.
This is the boonies, so it's weird that it's seemingly infiltrated everywhere. And you know, what's fascinating and depressing is that, okay, we all know that the UK is clown world. No offense, but it's like, you guys, you know, same thing with Canada, right? To a large extent, we're getting there, if not already there. But what we're seeing more and more lately is that the US Americans, you're joining us. You're joining us in this hell that we live in, because it turns out some of the Democratic presidential candidates are super duper progressive and down with the intersectional LGBTQ2SI. There's probably more letters I'm forgetting, but they're very affirming of that kind of thing. Because in honor of National Pronoun Day, Julian Castro actually issued this tweet. Using someone's correct pronouns and giving your own isn't difficult. I'm Julian Castro, he, him, elle. It takes one extra breath to help people feel seen and respected. I think that's worth it. Hashtag Pronouns Day.
What's elle? Is that they in Spanish?
It's like he in Spanish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
That's a very intersectional tweet you've pointed out, because not only is he saying like, hey, I'm down with you non-binary folks, but it's also like, hey,
minorities,
and also
give
like,
me your vote.
Yeah, a Hispanic, so a little extra check there.
Exactly.
Pretty cool. And as
quite
actually
calculated.
Yeah, no, seriously, it is. And as one Twitter user pointed out, Castro isn't the only Democrat who's getting down specifically with the pronoun thing. If you're not on Twitter, there's kind of this meme going around that if someone has pronouns in their bio, you can pretty much, I don't want to say ignore what they have to say, because sometimes they might say good stuff, but it's you kind of know what ideological perspective they're going to be coming to you as. And as one user pointed out, let's see, Pete Buttigieg, okay, apparently he added his pronouns to his Twitter bio today, I'm guessing in honor of National Pronoun Day, and Chasen too, who, if you don't know, is his husband. And this user said, there are now 6 presidential candidates who have their pronouns in their Twitter bios: Cory Booker, Julian Castro, Kamala Harris, Tom Steyer, and Elizabeth Warren. So again, like, you know, a few years ago, I remember when we talked about this whole pronoun thing and people were laughing. This is stupid. Who cares? There are like 5 blue-haired people on the internet who are trying to this. Like, no, there are some people on here, specifically someone like Elizabeth Warren, who has a decent chance of becoming president. Her pronouns are in the bio. And I'm not saying that just because she lists pronouns, it's the end of the world. But you have to understand where that ideology comes from, right?
It's crazy to me too, because like the people that they're, you know, trying to help here by putting the pronouns in their bio, like the LGBT population, or even more like the trans and non-binary population, which is even more specific than that, yeah, right? They're very, very tiny.
Yes.
But there's clearly a huge market for it outside of the LGBT. Or there's got to be a market for it, because they're all doing it right now. They think that this is the way to win a Democratic election.
Yeah.
And that's pretty concerning, I think, that so many people actually think that this is legitimate.
Right. And that's the thing. When you talk about presidential elections, especially the primaries, what you try to do is you try to rally up your base.
Yeah.
Right. If you're a Republican, that means reaching out to evangelicals, blue collar workers, tell you that, because you want those primary voters who more often than not in a closed primary need to be registered Democrats. So I guess Democrats now have made a bet that their core base, their prime voters are down with this whole pronoun thing. And like you said, it's a small group who actually is LGBT, but I think even bigger is the group who thinks that, you know, pandering to this or embracing this lingo or whatever it is, that's how you signal your virtue. And again, I'm not trying to rag on this because we shouldn't be accepting of people or whatever, but understand, in Canada, okay, Bill C-16, there's actually laws now where if you don't use the correct pronoun, you can face legal penalties, okay? So this is the type of authoritarianism we're dealing with, because that's how it starts. It starts with, oh, listing the pronouns in the bio. I don't think that this is where it stops, though. Yeah. And we see that even in places like New York in the U.S., they're already starting to move toward compelled speech. Some people might say that they're already there. I forget how many genders are recognized in that state. Like you said, the slippery slope, it's very real. And these Democrats, they're attempting to appeal to a group who, by and large, are raging authoritarians. And today they're listing their pronouns. I wouldn't be surprised if eventually you have someone who is maybe even one of these candidates calling for laws like we see in Canada and like you already see on so many university campuses.
Of course. And I'm also, I can't wait till the point where the people that list these pronouns, it's not enough that they are he, him, and she, her, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's too binary. You need to have other things. That's the next step, right? We're gonna have a candidate with the Zizher, And everything
not intersectional enough. You need to be non-binary. Absolutely. Too many cis people on the playing field. And actually, it's funny that you mentioned that, because we already see that among these activists, there's no such thing as placating them, because they're always going to want more. It's like if you throw a dog a bone, he's not just going to leave you alone after that bone. I'm sorry, but a lot of these activists are the same way. We have this user who says, on this hashtag pronouns day, I just want to point out that almost all of the presidential candidates constantly speak in binaries. And we notice. We notice those who make an effort not to as well. So, okay, so Elizabeth Warren, I'm sorry, you can list your pronouns in your bio, you know, she. But if you're talking about things like a women's reproduction when it comes to abortion, well, guess what? Men can get pregnant as well.
That's right.
You're not even addressing those who are non-binary. It's
and
very
horrible. We yeah. notice. Don't exactly. get like we all notice, like all two of us, right?
Yeah.
But it drives me nuts. And also one thing I want to point out on a side note is the holiday stuff. Like what we had Gay Pride Month. Didn't we have like a week of that too? Like another separate week?
Yeah. And someone did point out online. So like June is Pride Month. Yeah. But now we have National Pronoun Day. And also I think National Coming Out Day.
Oh, that, yeah.
I saw that pretty recently. Like shouldn't all of these holidays be in the Pride Month?
They're going to take over every little aspect of the calendar. Like, you know, every single day, every single month is going to be affiliated with them. The rainbow already is. We've already lost the rainbow. Sorry, guys. You know, us Irish people, you know, with our little leprechauns at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah, that's true. That's gay now.
We lost.
That's literally gay.
We lost. Yeah, it's a gay leprechaun now.
No, that's true.
And next, you know, it's going to be Christmas. There's going to be a Winterkin celebration on Christmas. It's all going
to
be...
Well, no, that's true. When I was trying to think of a way to show people how ridiculous the whole pronoun thing is, I was trying to, like, could you imagine if I, like, said I was a cat and I expected you to, you know, respect that? But that's the thing. No, that's actually the two-spirit thing, the furry, the otherkin thing. That's actually part of it. So it's like we've gotten to a point where I can't even parody these beliefs anymore, because someone out there will be sitting there. It's like, that's what are you saying? Because I tell you in every way but physical, I am a wolf. So it's like, what do you do with this? And I've always been the belief that there are some parts of your identity that you choose and there are some that you don't, right? Like you can, you don't choose, let's say, well, okay. Opposite way. You can choose your religion. You can choose your profession, and that's fine. Part of your identity. There are other parts you don't choose. Like you don't choose your nationality. I can't just say I identify as a Saudi princess and expect to keep collecting all of this oil money. I'm sorry, but for a lot of people, gender is the same way. It's not just an expression of how you feel. It's a descriptor of a way you're born, and it always has been like that. Except for, as people will love to point out, maybe two tribes in the Amazon. Who like have a different thing going, therefore gender
of course.
Is a construct.
It's like some people are born with three legs, therefore humans are not bipedal.
Exactly.
That's the whole argument, right?
And so the reason why I want to bring attention to this is, again, these are people who are not happy with the live and let live mentality. I would love to say, oh, you know, you believe this, I don't, let's just agree to disagree. But we're at a point now where these people have shown that they're not happy with that. I mean, we've seen teachers fired for not using the right pronouns, not even using the wrong pronouns, but not using the right pronouns, right? We did a segment on that teacher in, I think, Virginia. People have been banned from social media for not using the right pronouns. People have been sued for not waxing men's balls. laws have been made restricting people's speech to protect the sensibilities a very confused individual. So it should worry you that Democrats are jumping on board with this. Some people are saying that this is just for the primaries, and then in the general, they're going to go a little bit more moderate, a little bit more mainstream. Like, look, they can try that. But if they, you know, if they're doing all the stuff with the pronouns, then they expect to speak to middle America come, I don't know, September of 2020, it's going to be hard. It's going to be really hard to come back from that. Never mind, we have people who, okay, Beto O'Rourke, as far as I can tell, is not one of the candidates who has his pronouns in the bio. Very, very close-minded.
That shocks me, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's fake Mexican, so you'd think he could be fake trans in solidarity. But anyway, he recently made headlines because he was saying that if churches or religious institutions more broadly don't recognize and support same-sex marriage, then they should have their tax exemption removed from them. And I don't think that Beto O'Rourke is going to be the nominee by a long shot. Actually, why he's still in these debates, I really don't understand, aside from maybe entertainment value, which is fair enough. It is entertaining. But I do think that the things he's saying now, there's a good chance that, I mean, everyone's trying to be the more woke one. Other candidates may start adopting stuff like this. Now, Pete Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren have come out and said no, you know, not supporting same-sex marriage. We can't really use that as like a carrot to, or tax-exempt status as a carrot over churches' heads, so they don't have to, or so they would support that. But I think the fact that people are even saying things like this should be very worrying. And again, I've talked about it before. There's like such a thing as negative and positive rights. I think increasingly we're seeing the LGBT lobby kind of try to make people believe that by not catering to them in very specific ways, their rights are being violated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which has never been what, I guess, like human interaction or rights has meant previously. And before we move on, I do just want to say that, you know, there are LGBT activists out there who are trying to make it seem as if being someone who is LGBT is like a political identity or a political ideology or this authoritarian personality type, and it's not. Whenever we talk about these crazy stories of these activists doing insane things, this is not a reflection on every single person out there who is LGBT, right? Dave Rubin, Blair White, Mike Harlow, Brandon Straka, Scott Pressler, who's the wonderful person who's going around the United States doing cleanups of big cities. Like, these are all LGBT individuals who don't support these things. So, I mean, I know if you're hearing story after story talking about these LGBT activists, you might be kind of inclined to start to believe that they represent all LGBT people.
And they want to.
And they want to.
And they claim to.
They want you to believe that. I know. I'm someone who I don't even, like, I've not talked about anything like gay marriage. I've also not said anything like gay people should not adopt, but because, or anything like that. We've never made videos about that, but because I speak out on things like child drag queens, compelled speech, trans children, I've been called homophobic and anti-LGBT. And it's like, what?
Yeah.
I know, like on social media, there was this video of this guy like twerking in the streets, and I made a point about how pride parades are now about exhibitionism, and then a bunch of people were calling me homophobic. It's like, whoa, if you think twerking in the streets like in Daisy Dukes is what the gays do, I would say you have a bigger chance of being homophobic than me, all right? Because I don't know, maybe I just hang out with better gays than you do, but it's not all of them. Okay, so next story is Gina Rodriguez. So if you don't know who she is, you were not alone. I did not either. You didn't either, right?
Pardon me?
Gina Rodriguez.
Oh, I had no idea. And that's probably no surprise to any of our viewers at this point. Oh, Liam doesn't know who a celebrity is? Yeah.
He's very difficult to try to watch TV shows with, I will tell you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, come on. This is from a show called Jane the Virgin, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, so. I know. I'd heard of the show before. I was immediately like, okay, probably won't interest me. So I hadn't checked it out before. Not familiar with this actress. But when I saw her name was trending on Twitter and Google Trends, I was like, oh, this is interesting. I wonder what happened. I clicked the story and I learned that she had recently posted what was, I think, being described as an anti-Black racist video on her Instagram stories. And so I kind of thought, like, what could she have possibly said? Oh, my goodness. Was it some racist tirade? Was she like filming herself beating this Black woman while yelling slurs? What could possibly be so bad that she, like, this is literally a trending story worldwide, essentially, because they were mad. People were really mad. And we have a sanitized version of the story she posted here, just so you guys can kind of revel in the awfulness that is Gina Rodriguez, apparently.
Voodoo, I could do what you do. Believe me. Just give me heebie-jeebies.
Yeah, so, okay, obviously that was a very short clip of her singing along to a song that did have the N-word in it.
That's what was bleeped out, just in case you weren't clear.
Yeah, because, you know, we're not trying to be lynched by YouTube. So that was what put her on Google and Twitter trends and totally canceled online. And for anyone who's not familiar with my background, just by the way, I didn't grow up in the U.S. I didn't grow up really with too much American culture. I grew up in Asia. I did go to an American school, but still, you know, my family background, all that. Asian, my mom's Canadian. I later moved to the States for college. Liam, you're Canadian. So I feel like we're kind of almost, when it comes to this whole like N-word, I don't know, like controversy, the whole debate or conversation surrounding it, like we don't have this in Hong Kong. We don't really have it in Canada to the same, like,
no.
So I don't know how you feel, but looking from the outside, looking into American culture, they're crazy. They're ridiculous.
Absolutely. This whole thing drives me nuts. Yeah. It's not the first time we dealt with this. A few months ago, there was a lady who came up on stage in a rapper's concert.
Kendrick Lamar, I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah, and then she dropped an N-bomb that was in the song, mm-hmm. and she got booed off the stage.
Yeah, right? So it's like he invited her up on stage to sing a song. She did, and he got mad at her for it.
Right.
So, I mean, this is ridiculous. And by the way, we're not the only ones who think this. Anytime I talk to someone from another culture, which we'll be getting into a second, they agree with me. Like, Americans are really, really weird about, I think, race relations in general, frankly, but especially Black and non-Black race relations. You guys have issues to work out. Obviously, the N-word historically has been used as an awful slur. I don't support that, but you'd have to be pretty dense, I think, to not recognize that nowadays it is used casually, pretty often with a non-derogatory meaning. We see this all the time in movies, music especially, like among entire communities. And so I tweeted about this when I saw the story, something about how, like, if some people can say it, then it doesn't really make sense how it's always unacceptable for other people based on skin color. Like, are we just ignoring? Yeah, like we're just ignoring the context of what Gina Rodriguez said entirely. Like, she was singing a song.
In support of the culture indirectly, right? Like, I like the song, I know the lyrics to it, I'm singing it, right? Which already I think is bad enough, because I think it's a bad, that whole culture scene to me, I think is bad.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they should be using that language. If there are people that should not use that word, nobody should use that word.
Yeah.
Or we should all be able to use the word. That's my opinion.
I agree 100%. And that's why, like, there were people when I tweeted about this on social media saying, oh, you just want to be able to use the N-word. I really don't. I have no interest in any of that stuff. Like, I'm sorry, opposite. But yeah, I think so much of hip-hop culture is very disrespectful to women. I think it glorifies violence, drug use. I don't want any part of that. So I mean, I don't even like regular swearing. I'm not saying I don't ever, but I try not to. So like, no, I have no interest in saying the N-word. What bothers me, the reason we're talking about this is because I just want someone who sings a song on Instagram to not incur the wrath of the internet. That's what I want. Okay. Yeah. And what kind of made me, I don't want to say laugh, but really interested me in this as well, is that the whole thing is like Gina Rodriguez is obviously she's Hispanic, right? And so now we're kind of looking at layers of intersectionality, like, okay, white people can't say it because your slave owner is really bad. Okay, but what about a Hispanic person, right? Because they're in some ways like removed from the whole slavery relationship that, you know, a lot of people say represented the entirety of Blacks and whites in the past, which was not true. Not all white people own slaves. But can you
and
really...
And Blacks own slaves. And, you know, it's just a false narrative all the way through.
Absolutely. So, yeah, but it's like you're talking... Even if we are going to buy into that mentality of, hey, let's look at the cultural context and the historical context, how do Hispanics play into that? Like, I'm really interested to hear what these people say, because I don't think there's going to be a consistent answer. And never mind, but you also have the, you know, if you can say it if you're Black, what about if you're part Black, you're mixed race? You and I know someone who is, I think, a quarter or half Black, who wants to be a rapper, but if you were to look at him, is completely white looking. So can he get away with saying it?
Right.
If, like, do we need to do a blood test or something that he just brings to his concerts and say, no, I can say it.
Is it the just one drop rule or what have you? You know, I got, point I had a 0.1% sub-Saharan African on my DNA test.
I got 23andMe. Does that give you the card to say it?
Well, it was taken away, so I've lost it now. But, you know, is that enough? Yeah. Is that enough for me to just start dropping N-bombs?
Never mind. I mean, if you are a Black person or someone who's part Black like Kamala Harris, but your African heritage is not from the United States slave trade, can you say the N-word when really it's like
very true.
You weren't part of that oppression. So, I mean, what exactly is the rule here? I want to know. Here's what one person online said in response to this whole controversy. She obviously has a very... Actually, sorry. Messed up my insert. So I mentioned the whole idea about this being very culturally specific. So you might be familiar with Zuby, who is... I think he's originally from... He's from the UK, and he's black. That's right. And he was recently on Joe Rogan's show, if you haven't caught it yet. But he responded to a post that I made. And he said this, which I thought was interesting, about the use of the N-word. He said, in Central and Eastern Europe, I've been called that word by lots of young people. They're totally unaware it has any potentially negative connotation. They say it to be cool and to appeal to me. Some think it's the actual word for a black person. Can't even blame them. And that's true. Like, I remember... where I grew up, no one was saying the N-word or anything like that. I think I was pretty old, maybe like 11 or 12, but the first time I heard it, and it was in a pop culture reference. I never tried to say it, but it wasn't until I was maybe, you know, 14, later teen, that I began to realize the full gravity that some people felt when you say it.
Right.
And so I asked him in response to that. So as someone who is black, when a white person who's from a different culture comes up to you and calls you that, like, what's your response? How does that make you feel? He said this, which I thought was interesting. It's usually accompanied by a smile, excitement, and a fist bump or high five, so I don't get mad. Clearly no ill intent. If their English is good, I'll normally let them know it has negative meanings to many people. Then they'll say, why do the rappers say it? Hard question to answer. And I think that is true. I wouldn't really have a good way to explain that to them. If you're coming from a culture that is not American, the whole idea that it's okay for them to say it because they're black, but you can't say it because you're not, like, that other cultures are not going to get that. I mean, I'm trying to think if there are
I'm actually surprised that China doesn't use it more often, from what I heard, you know.
Yeah, exactly. But, because it's like there are, the US is one of the least racist cultures, don't get me wrong, but the way that especially nowadays they're handling race relations is more and more, I think, contrived and less egalitarian. Mm-hmm. But here's that activist that I was talking about who made a statement on social media, obviously has a very different opinion than we do about it. She says, if you saw my tweets about Gina Rodriguez's use of the N-word, some of which I've removed, you'll know that I was fired up and used some strong language. I stand behind my reaction. But this is a serious topic and it deserves more than 280 characters. I mean, just there. Is it a serious topic that someone's saying it on Instagram? I don't know. First, I want to be clear about something I believe deeply. If you are not African-American, you should never use that word, whether if it's in a speech or singing along with your favorite song. Okay, and again, right there is no other word that I can think of where context does not matter, period.
It's true.
Like, swear words.
It really is the Voldemort word.
No, it is. And even, like, you can say recite some of the most heinous quotes from, you know, evil dictators, but that still doesn't mean no one would say you're saying them. Those are your words. Apparently... quotes don't apply to the N-word, though. She continued, I'm so proud to be part of my amazing Latinx community, but I'm very aware of my privilege as a light-skinned Latina, and it deeply concerns me when I see people within our community ignoring or not acknowledging the discrimination that our Afro-Latinx brothers and sisters can face. We all have the responsibility to keep learning and to do our best to internalize the experience of others, yada, yada, yada. So there's like... if you're Afro-Latinx, so I'm guessing that's maybe someone of African descent from a Caribbean background, can you use the N-word? Because the N-word is specific to the United States, which your ancestors were not a part of, right. Again. So it's like...
it's crazy. But even the part where they have Afro-Latinx as like a group of people, this reminds me of like what they used to have in Dominican Republic when they had a caste system.
They
had like 60 or 100 different, by the end of it, of like... qualifications as to what you were as a human being if you had a certain mixture of blood.
Yeah.
You know, like someone that was part black and part white was called this, but if they had a child with a native, they were called that. And it was like, all right, so we're all just going to like have this kind of super purity spiral by the end of the day.
Essentially.
Like this is what we tried to fight against, I thought, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that what they were trying to stop?
And before we'll move on to the story, Gina Rodriguez, again, I wasn't familiar with her, but I started kind of looking her up a bit more when the story blew up. And apparently this isn't the first time she's been accused of being anti-black. That, like, anti-black, not my phrase. It's what people are calling her. Mm. So I have an article here from The Independent that is titled Jane the Virgin star Gina Rodriguez cries as she addresses anti-black claims. So this is what... she been known for before in terms of controversy. Okay, the article says, Jane the Virgin actor Gina Rodriguez has given an emotional interview addressing accusations made against her of being anti-Black, a claim she emphatically denies. Rodriguez sparked controversy in November 2018 after taking part in a Net-a-Porter roundtable discussion with fellow actors Gabriel Union, Emma Roberts, and Ellen Pompeo. When the subject of pay disparity in Hollywood arose, Rodriguez made a point of highlighting the intersectional aspect of the topic. So far, so good, right? Like, she's talking about pay disparity. She's also bringing up intersectionality. Progressives should like this. Apparently not. What she said is, where white women get paid more than Black women get paid more than Asian women get paid more than Latina women, and it's like a very scary space to step into. She said that Black women get paid more than certain other groups in Hollywood, which I think is true, especially probably. I think if you look at the music industry, but you're not supposed to say that. It's okay if you're ragging on white women for getting paid more, but you can't do it for Black women. The article continued, the actor's comments were condemned by some who pointed out that several Latina actors, such as Modern Family Sofia Vergara, earn a substantial amounts of money in comparison to Black actors, because that's how it works, right? If you talk about the pay gap and you bring up that Oprah is richer than the white guy next door, feminists would be happy with that and accept it as an argument. So it's good that that's what they're doing here, because it's consistent. Rodriguez has now addressed the criticism she received, stating that she found the backlash devastating, to say the least. She explained that as a young child, she felt seen by Black actors on screen, as there weren't many Latino shows on air. Which to me doesn't really make sense, because I would never say, it's like, oh, I'm a half Chinese, and that actor isn't, but at least they're not white, so I feel a connection. Doesn't make sense. Anyway, she said, so to get anti-Black is saying that I'm anti-family. That was really devastating to me, and I know in my heart. I know what I meant, and I really wish we weren't living in a culture where we're clickbait, because I've never said anything controversial about anybody, she said. The actor went on to say that people from white and Asian communities weren't offended by her comments, a statement that's become a source of contention on Twitter. We're offended. Don't use us as a way to come for other women of color's earnings that they fought so hard for, one person tweeted. So you're not going to bring races together by trying to divide them constantly. Like I said, I don't want to say the N-word. I'd be happy if no one ever said the N-word ever again. But what I'm looking for is a community where people are treated equally, no privileges or punishments given on skin color. And the thing is, like, what I don't get about these activists who are trying to cancel Gina Rodriguez for this is, like, you or the Black community is not helped in any way by her being put through the ringer, because what she was doing was not racist. I think this is not trying to protect anybody. This is actually just trying to punish people because you have a chip on your shoulder. And it's a terrible way to live.
I agree. And actually, I want to add on to that. I want to say that I think that having protected classes based on inalienable features is ultimately not congruent with multiculturalism.
It's not. You can't have it.
Right. So I think this is actually an important issue if we want this kind of Western experiment of multiculturalism to survive, right? Yeah. So we really have to, and it's hard because I think that most people in this chat and watching the show are on board. They say that this is a ridiculous thing, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a huge counterculture, or really dominant culture in this case, I think, that disagrees. And I think it really does spell doom in some ways for...
No, you're right. Like, this whole idea of different races and cultures living together side by side, it's not really been tried before. It really hasn't. And I think the way that if we have any hope of making it work, it's by trying to unify people, right? Focusing on what makes us the same, what brings us together. Trying to set up all these differences, these barriers, it's only going to alienate people and make them resentful. And like I said, I don't care about this. This doesn't affect me at all. This is not the media that I watch. It's like, whatever, do whatever you want. But I think there are a lot of people out there, maybe Latino people, maybe white people, biracial people, white passing people who do enjoy this culture and want to be able to participate in it. But everyone telling them that they can't, that they better keep their mouths shut, that because of something they didn't do, they need to be punished in this way. I think that will alienate a lot of them. And that's something, if you want this to work, all of us living together, you need to be careful of. All right. So our next story is Project Veritas. If you're not familiar with them, they're an investigative group headed by James O'Keefe. We had the pleasure of interviewing him back when we were Uncensored. Was that like a year ago?
Probably over a year ago.
It's not on YouTube, but you can still catch it on Blaze TV. I think our episodes are archived there. Yeah. So they're out with a new set of videos. This time, their latest whistleblower is a CNN insider who took hundreds of hours of undercover recordings from staff at CNN. And what his recordings show is that, surprise, surprise, CNN has a liberal bias. Oh, I know. What? It's shocking, to say the least. Here is one example of a clip that was released that talks about their bias in covering different shooting incidents.
Seriously, I don't know where the affluent neighborhoods in New Jersey are.
Princeton.
Princeton. Okay, let's say in Princeton, white kid gets shot at Princeton University. He's visiting his big brother, who's a student there. He gets shot. He gets killed. We're going to get coverage on that because, oh my God, we have the precious little thing.
But three people get shot in Newark.
Nobody cares. Unless it happens on 40 minutes.
That was just a short excerpt, but there's much more footage available on Project Veritas's YouTube channel. So make sure you're following them on YouTube. The channel is just Project Veritas. I would also check them out on Twitter at @Project_Veritas to stay up to date with what they're doing, just, you know, in case YouTube decides to kind of bring the hammer down on them. So I don't really have that much to say about this because, frankly, I'm not in any way surprised. I mean, we've talked about media bias, specifically mainstream media, and I would say even more specifically than that, CNN bias on this show tons of times before. And I'm at a point now where for me to be surprised about CNN's behavior, it would literally need to be something like, Anderson Cooper stays young by bathing in the blood of Honduran virgins. Like, that would surprise me.
That's a fair point.
That they cover shooting incidents unequally for views, ratings, or to push an agenda, that doesn't surprise me. I'm sorry, but I'm like, I'm so past this. So I love Project Veritas, and I respect their work so much. But for me, I was kind of almost like, I don't know, expecting more from these videos, like expecting some sort of revelation that I didn't know. Like, they were even more insidious and calculating than I thought. But with that being said, I know there are a lot of people out there who somehow do view CNN as like this objective news source. And hey, if you're one of those people, maybe this will be helpful in convincing you otherwise. With that being said, though, I also kind of realistically think that if you're someone who still thinks that CNN is unbiased, not that you still watch them, I think a ton of people watch them and like they know what they're getting, which is like fine, you can still watch them, but like, if you still think that they're just like arbiters of truth, totally hands off with their own opinions, these are the same type of people who like they'll believe whatever anonymous whistleblower sources that the New York Times talks about. They'll be like, oh, no, that's legitimate. But when it comes to something like Project Veritas, where it's like literally it's a public source, it's on video, they might still say, no, I don't know. I don't know if I trust that.
Well, so. Even for people like myself, who what I used to do was I would check CNN and I would check Fox News and maybe a couple other sources and be like, okay, somewhere in between, maybe here is the truth. You know, you're like a moderate and you use both sides as measuring sticks. But I think that even if you're one of those people now, when you start seeing stuff like this come out, you need to say, okay, maybe I don't even use them as a measuring stick because it's so blatant, right? That it's not really any sort of valid goalpost.
Yeah, because there's a difference between being a biased or a source that's kind of biased toward liberalism and just being essentially an advocate arm of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, like a propaganda
arm. Yeah, like there's a difference between that. And I think we've kind of crossed more into the propaganda arm. And I think one of the revelations that I found especially interesting about this was the revelation about how Jeff Zucker, who if you don't know is the head of CNN, no relation to Jeff Zuckerberg, or sorry, the other Zuckerberg,
Mark.
He has, so Jeff Zucker, CNN Zucker, of CNN has a personal vendetta against Trump, apparently, and there are clips to support that.
On the calls to executive producers and news staffers across the country, it is clear that Zucker wants his network to stay focused on impeachment and nothing else.
Guns will be the central topic in the 2020 Democratic nomination race today. Giffords pack is paired up with MSNBC. They've got a gun town hall in Las Vegas. 10 candidates will be showing up there throughout the day.
I don't care about the MSNBC event, okay? I don't care about them. Let's just stay very focused on impeachment. and everything that happened today. Because, look, you're going to be coming on at 3 o'clock. Trump is at 2. Well, all the president's men are part of the cover-up.
The impeachment stuff, there's new developments every day. More shoes drop, and it's like, there's just nothing we can do. If Zucker wants impeachment every single day to be the top story.
That's what he wants.
Yeah, he wants impeachment. So
above all else, honestly.
Above all else.
So for people who aren't familiar with how kind of news media works, usually every day there's something called a rundown, which is a meeting where everyone kind of puts out, okay, he's laughing because Blaze, since we're remote, we don't really have a rundown meeting, but we are supposed to submit what our episodes are going to be about every morning, which we don't do a very good job of. Ricky, if you're watching this, I am sorry. We do try sometimes, but it's, yeah, but anyway, so what we see here is that, you know, there are people who are giving other story alternatives to impeachment, which frankly nobody cares about. If you're not one of the CNN's core viewership, but no, he's pushing impeachment. He wants to talk about impeachment. And this is just one of the ways that we see that. Look, you know, there's nothing wrong with wanting to talk about impeachment, whatever, but the idea that it's even possible, frankly, to have an unbiased news source, because not only do you have to worry about how you report certain things, you have to worry about what you report in the first place, right? There is a substantial bias involved in even just saying, instead of, you know, talking about all of these gang-related deaths in Chicago, we're going to talk about impeachment. That's an editorial decision, which in and of itself reveals some sort of bias.
And furthermore, I think if you want to do actual proper journalism, it's something that requires time, right? And that's just not something you can afford to do from a business perspective in today's
the 24-hour news cycle.
Where it's a 24-hour news cycle. You don't have time to send in an actual journalist and do some fact-checking. You're just right away throwing out...
Here's like what gets clicks.
Exactly. So, you know, just kind of an approximate fact of here's what we think, but it's portrayed in a way that's going to, you know, get attention. Mm-hmm. And that's just a huge clickbait culture
and
problem.
Actually, I mean, we're talking about like real journalism. To me, what Project Veritas does, investigative journalism, where they're actually going out there and they're looking for information, they're finding it firsthand. That's something that we used to see quite often in the media. And we really don't see that. That's what I would say. We're in an era where investigative journalism is dead. So often what we see on CNN, MSNBC, like they're just talking about what Trump has tweeted out.
Or regurgitating each other's articles, right?
Yes.
There's an article on CNN, and now let's do an article about the article on CNN, and then it's just like a whole food chain of articles on
Hey, it's fine. You know, commentary, people like that. That's what we do.
But some of it isn't even commentary. Some of it's like reporting on other articles.
Like, this is what they said. Like, that's fine, but like, own it. Don't call yourself this unbiased source, this, you know, the pinnacle of journalism when you're talking about Trump's tweets. It just, it doesn't make sense. And I also wasn't surprised when one CNN staffer mentioned that Zucker seems to have an affinity for Kamala Harris, because we're not just talking about bias against Trump. Even within, you know, Democrats or the left, CNN is still picking favorites. So like, if you're a left winger watching this and you're thinking, oh, I don't care, I hate Trump, like, well, do you think it's fair that even like your potential preferred candidate is not going to get the airtime he or she deserves because Zucker says, no, I prefer someone else? Because I don't. Here's that clip.
A straight white.
So who does he want to be president?
Take on some of these issues of racial justice with this kind of passion. And he does.
Here's the thing. I don't know. I think he wants a Democrat. I don't think he has any particular favorite. Well, because here's the thing. He donated before to Kamala Harris when she was running for Senate in California.
Look for moments in a debate
but I think he kind of likes Pete, but I can tell if he also likes Biden more.
I also think we should be doing a segment somewhere on what Kamala Harris
could you imagine if Trump said Elizabeth Warren should not have internet service, and instead of being outraged, Fox News actually did a whole segment about the validity of that. Hey, maybe Elizabeth Warren shouldn't have internet outreach. That's the same thing with the whole Trump Twitter thing. It's absolutely ridiculous that not only would they not call Kamala Harris out for it, but they would actually maybe entertain it. It's like, did she just make an amazing point, though? Like, is this something we should be doing?
And we've seen this, right? We've seen Trump say things that Democratic presidents have in the past. Yeah. And it's like a totally different reaction, right?
No, exactly. And we see this with the whole new Ukraine gate thing, right? Yeah. I mean, Biden, some might say, actually was bragging about withholding aid money to get a prosecutor fired, which, I mean, that sounds like a quid pro quo to me. And then Trump calls someone and is like, maybe you should look into it. And all of a sudden, like, that's you're unheard of. I'm sorry. I don't actually think anyone was legitimately outraged by that. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
No.
And here's the thing. Everybody has bias, and that's okay. I have bias. I think no one is unbiased. It's not possible. We all have our certain predispositions, our own experiences, backgrounds that kind of lean us in favor of one thing versus another. I accept that. The only thing that I would ask is that you be upfront about it, right? You just come clean. I rag on the Young Turks a lot, like a lot, but I've got to say, I still have more respect for someone like Cenk Uygur, who is upfront about his own beliefs, than I would Don Lemon, because, you know,
right.
Cenk's not pretending to be anything that he's not.
Founder of the Justice Democrats.
Yeah, correct. He comes out. I'm a progressive. The show is from a progressive standpoint. Okay, fine. I'm still going to criticize you, but I can't, you know, really fault you for being something that you're not, or trying to mislead people with how you're labeling yourself. I can definitely say that about Don Lemon, though. I mean, Don Lemon is, I think, like an outright left-wing activist, and yet still presenting himself as, you know, this news anchor, like unbiased journalist. Don't call yourself impartial when you slant literally every single story just to push a certain narrative. And, you know, Tulsi Gabbard, she's someone who, whether you love her or hate her, support her or not, you have to admit is an example of someone who's kind of been facing this whole fake news media narrative in a lot of the same ways that Trump has. And it's interesting because in the Project Veritas tapes, they actually do mention Tulsi Gabbard briefly and Yang as well as someone who CNN is kind of slanted against. And I don't know if you guys watched the Democrat debate the other night, but Tulsi Gabbard actually did call out CNN's bias on CNN, which I thought was a pretty good power move. We have an excerpt of that here.
New York Times and CNN have also smeared veterans like myself for calling for an end to this regime change war. Just 2 days ago, the New York Times put out an article saying that I'm a Russian asset and an Assad apologist and all these different smears. This morning, a CNN commentator said on national television that I'm an asset of Russia. Completely despicable.
That made me happy. That was.
I was ready for the cane to come out.
Yeah. Just like very convenient. Mic cut out, lost their signal. No, that made me very, very happy. So I hope you guys check out the Project Veritas videos. They're very interesting. I think they may still be in the process of releasing more material. So, check them out, share them, give them a like. And
yeah, they need to get some momentum behind that kind
exactly,
of stuff
when
it happens, right?
As popular and retweeted as their announcements were about these videos, they still did not make trending. Which to me is very, very suspicious.
Well, they decide what trends. That's not even hidden. They admit it. So it's, that's no surprise.
Anyway, so I just hope that we can get these videos out there and that this could be maybe yet another drop in the bucket that will be CNN's fall from grace. Okay. AOC.
Hooray.
Yay, AOC. Okay, so recently she gave a talk about how, I don't even know what the thesis of the talk was, if this was specifically about climate change, but there are clips of her talking about climate change in the talk at the very least. And part of it, the part that's getting the most attention, is how she mentioned climate change had almost embittered her toward the prospects of motherhood. And she was even kind of tearing up as she said this. We have that here.
This note, I speak to you not as an elected official or public figure, but I speak to you as a human being. A woman whose dreams of motherhood now taste bittersweet because of what I know about our children's future. And that our actions are responsible for bringing their most dire possibilities into focus. I speak to you as a daughter and descendant of colonized peoples who have already begun to suffer.
People were making fun of her for getting a little bit choked up there. And I mean, I personally don't mind if politicians tear up every now and then.
But I think she's lying, to be honest.
You don't think that was genuine?
Well, I don't think anybody does, but I mean, to me, I think she was a 29-year-old bartender at the time. It's like, well, that's generally speaking, not the path that you're on if you're actually thinking serious about motherhood.
Fair enough. Yeah.
So it seems a little bit like an act, at least to me.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, I care about the environment. Like, I support hydropower, nuclear. Like, I want to lower emissions. I want clean air, water. I don't want overfishing. That's probably what I'm worried most about right now, as well as like things like pollution in the water. But what bothers me is that the environmentalist movement nowadays, and I include people like AOC in this and Greta Thunberg, like it's moved largely, although maybe not entirely, toward or from trying to find real world implementable solutions, things we can actually do, to just pushing hysteria, all out doomsday cult mode. I mean, sky is falling, just call it quits, everybody, we need to start freaking out. And for quite a few people, it's not even about the environmental or the environmentalism specifically anymore. It's about a whole bunch of other things, which we'll get to in just a few minutes. But regarding her take that motherhood, you know, or parenthood in general, when it comes to climate change, is maybe not a good idea. This isn't the first time she's talked about this. We covered it a while ago where she was saying that maybe, you know, having kids isn't the best idea in an era of climate change. We've heard That's people right. like Miley Cyrus say similar things. The Ginger Royal, who's married the actress, I forget his name, they've talked about how they're only having two kids instead of, you know, more because of climate change. This is a thing. This is an agenda that environmentalists are now pushing. Have fewer kids because climate change. Our main evolutionary biological directive as living beings, and I'm not even going to say humans because it's like literally all living beings, not just us. Our main goal is to reproduce. Like that's how life works. So the fact that people like AOC, Miley Cyrus, the royals, like they're even talking about this, they're saying, I don't know if I can have kids, like climate change. I mean, A, that's defeatist, because I personally at least fully believe that we are capable of living sustainably on the planet. Maybe mm-hmm. not doing the best job of it right now, but I do believe we will get there through Absolutely. Innovation. And B, like it's Darwinism. I mean, these people, they're like pandas. They don't want to breed. And, you know, part of me is like, maybe we should try to snap these people out of it. But the other part of me is like, well, I mean, if they were so easily convinced into cutting off their own bloodlines, like yeah. maybe we should let nature run its course.
Oh, I agree. I just kind of sit there and smile and I say, well, nothing of value was lost. And in truth, I think it also coincides with part of the whole greater ideology that the left and everything is taken up right now, where, you know, they're a very hedonistic culture mm-hmm. as a whole. So it's like, oh, we don't want to have kids anyways, because yeah. we want to pretend that we're in our 20s our whole life. You know, we want to live like and drink and live in the moment and
spend money on ourselves because, you know,
right, exactly.
Kids, we can't have as many avocado toasts and gender studies degrees. So, yeah.
It all just coincides and it's all an attempt to gain power. And I think it's evident when you see how they lash out at anyone that talks about nuclear power, even if there's a bunch of TED Talks by one guy who was an activist like this for mm-hmm. years before he realized, oh, nuclear is the only way to fix
yes.
this. Right. But still, not they that, will not no, hear it. Yeah. They will not hear it. Now he's the devil to them. So.
And that's what's frustrating to me, because I feel like nuclear is an actual, like, it's ready now. We could do this now. We could be moving away from, if that's what you really want, fossil fuels right now. And, it, you know, it doesn't have the fracking issues that come with natural gas. But there's, like, people still aren't happy with it. And not only are people against it, but there are these huge misinformation campaigns against it. And it's like,
it's true.
That's when I kind of feel, and like, Elizabeth Warren is someone who likes to call herself an environmentalist but hates nuclear. And it's like, to me, that's how I know you're not serious about this. That's how I know this is an ideology you're kind of bandwagoning onto and you don't actually care. Because if you did, you'd look into this more than you obviously have. So, I mean, with the thing with everyone not having kids is that is how cultures and civilizations die. I feel like I shouldn't need to explain that, because like, if no one has kids anymore, then like what's left? And I've had people complain, why do you care if someone doesn't have kids? I could not care less if an individual does not have kids. I don't care, right? But if people are pushing a narrative that nobody has kids, then you start to bring me into this a little bit, and I'm probably going to say something. And that's like, if our culture or our civilization dies out, which unfortunately I'm suspecting will happen if things keep going the way they are, then we'll have earned it. Like, this is just Darwinism. There's no other way for it. And I know it may be hard for some of us to imagine not having children because of the environment, but you have to understand, I think it's, we talked about a Rasmussen poll the other day that a majority of millennials think it's likely we'll all die in like 10 years. So they really do think things are that bad. And because of this hysteria,
I was shocked by that poll.
It is shocking.
As soon as I got past the majority of millennials think,
yeah,
I was like, I was like, what? This seems wrong to me. Yeah. But,
yeah. But yeah, so because of this hysteria, like not only are people not having kids, but we actually have rising instances of something called like climate-induced anxiety, where you're so concerned about climate change, you actually have things like anxiety and depression. And it's because people don't have hope for the future, which just goes, like, I get called anti-science all the time, even though, like, as far as I know, I've never denied any science. But it's like, you have to understand this hysteria, it's not in line with the predictions that people are giving. It's not. And we have this article here. It's not directly related to climate change, but it does talk about how hope is a key factor in recovering from anxiety disorders. And I think with, you know, I don't have much stock in helping people like AOC or the Greta Thunbergs of the world, but for your average person who cares about the environment, I do hope we can introduce through education and science a little bit more hope into their outlooks. Here's what it says. University of Houston Associate Professor of Clinical Psychology, Matthew Gallagher, has added his voice to a debate that spans the ages, the importance of hope. Gallagher reports in behavior therapy that hope is a trait that predicts resilience and recovery from anxiety disorders. His study examined the role of hope in predicting recovery in a clinical trial of 223 adults in cognitive behavior therapy for one of four common anxiety disorders: social anxiety disorder, panic disorder, generalized anxiety, and obsessive compulsive disorder. In reviewing recovery during CBT among the diverse clinical presentations, hope was a common element and a strong predictor of recovery, said Gallagher, who reports that moderate to large increases in hope and changes in hope were consistent across the five separate CBT treatment protocols. Hope is closely related to other positive psychology constructs such as self-efficacy and optimism that have also been shown to have clear relevance to promoting resilience to and recovery from emotional disorders. So I think when we talk about any movement that's growing more extreme, a unifying factor is that these people believe that we're on the brink and there's no turning back. And I think that's true about the environmentalist movement right now. That's very hysteric. I think that's true for some of the, like, the Black Lives Matter movement.
Absolutely.
I think that's true for the, like, growing actual right-wing identitarian movements in Europe who feel like their countries have lost. All of these groups are unified by not having any hope. And when people feel like there's no hope, they start to latch onto extreme things.
But I think the environmentalists have it worse, because the ones who take it that seriously, they probably live in a shoebox and defecate in like a bucket in the corner. So it just makes it that much worse that they're, you know, they're living this horrible lifestyle of, like, you know, everything's recycled and they...
Yeah, their deodorant doesn't work either. Right, exactly. And it's like they haven't showered since 2015. No, for sure. So people like Greta Thunberg, they say that we should be panicking, right? They want our panic, because everyone knows people who panic make amazing decisions, the best. You know, she laments that people are dying right now because of climate change. AOC has said similar things. This is the type of rhetoric I'm talking about that doesn't help people, that hurts not only people like AOC and Greta Thunberg, because I can only imagine by the things that they're saying that they really must have some serious anxiety over this, but it also, it spreads a narrative to people that is just not reflective of reality. And here we have Bjorn Lomborg. I've talked about him a lot on the show. Go follow him. He works for the head of the Copenhagen Consensus. He's pro-environment, but he's also pro-science and statistics, so we can understand, okay, what is the human impact really? What is the most efficient way of improving things? Here's him talking to Tucker Carlson about the claim that people are dying because of climate change.
We actually have pretty good data for how many people are actually dying from weather-related disasters, so climate-related disasters. And the truth is, over the last 100 years, it's dropped dramatically. Every year in the 1920s, we estimate about 500,000 people died around the world. Now, we've quadrupled the population, and yet the number has dropped like a stone. It's 95% reduced. We're now down to about 20,000 people that die every year.
So I wanted to show that to you guys, not to say that we shouldn't care about the environment. It's not a big deal, but I just wanted to put some perspective to the numbers that you always hear being thrown around. The other day I saw a post saying, you know, to those who are trying to hinder the environmentalist movement, do you hate the idea of clean air, clean water, you know, a planet for your child, for our children? That's not what people are upset about right now. I feel like, you know, I'm friends that talk with a lot of right-wingers. Very few of them, even the ones who are skeptical about, like, man-made climate change, think, yeah, screw the planet. Right. No, hey, I like dirty water, bring it on. Just dump whatever you want in the ocean. Doesn't matter. Like, no, that's a caricature. But I think what people are upset about are things like the hyperbole, and also, like I mentioned earlier, the growing movement to include other movements in the environmental movement.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing. And I think that they'd be getting a lot further in the actual, you know, fixing climate change for whatever amount that we actually can impact that.
Yeah.
They'd be in a lot further if they weren't playing those cards, right? Yeah. If that was actually their goal, you know, you get a lot more people that are conservative. There are a lot of hunters that are conservative, for example, that care a lot about conservation, but
they don't want to also implement socialism to get to the conversation. And to illustrate what we're talking about, we have this clip of AOC. That's another part of her speech where she really just is like bringing all the movements like into environmentalism. You'll see what I mean.
I speak to you as a daughter and descendant of colonized peoples who have already begun to suffer. The climate crisis's path is first impacting those who have not only contributed to our emissions the least, but have already suffered greatly in the global history of inequality, colonization, and imperialism, stacking one injustice upon another. Climate change is a consequence. It is a consequence of our unsustainable way of life, because it is unsustainable to organize our society as we have, centered on prioritizing personal gain and profit over any and all human or planetary considerations. It is unsustainable to naively believe that building a wall can shield ourselves from humanity's collective destiny. It is unsustainable to promote amnesia around gross injustices and ignorance of our past, to abdicate responsibility simply because it was our ancestors who committed them and not us.
So, I mean, you know, if you want environmentalism, everyone knows you got to bring in some socialism. You got to bring in some open borders too. Can't have walls, you know, anti-colonialism, just all of that stuff needs to be part of our intersectional environmentalist movement.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's hilarious because it turned out, I think it was Jordan Peterson is the first one I heard that ever said that it seems like the environmental movement is something other than the environmental movement. They're adding in some socialism to that.
Yeah.
It's the first time I heard it anyway. And I was like, that's literally exactly what she's admitting to here.
Right. And we see that in the Green New Deal. If anyone's actually read the bill, which we did an episode, again, I think when we were back in Uncensored, I actually went through it. It is very like marginally about the environment. It's essentially like, here's how we introduce socialism. And I'm like, we did that thing about the voting age thing that from the Suzuki Foundation. And it's like, you sign this pledge to care about the environment, but also stuff about indigenous rights and social equality. It's like, why? I mean, they're trying so to tack on all of these other things. We have things like, what is environmental racism that talks about, it's just, I mean, I can understand a place for intersectionality when we come to social issues, but I feel like the environmental issue, it should be about like policy making, science and things like that. Like we need to talk to experts in like the nuclear field, experts in solar and things like that. And so when we start tacking on all these ideological things, it just makes it so much harder to get to the root of the problem.
Right. Which is if they're really trying to claim to fix the environmental problems, then that's what they would do. But that's just not their motivation, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think so. And that's what's so frustrating because, you know, there are environmentalists out there who are trying to say like, hey, let's talk about something like single-use plastics. Here are alternatives. Here's what brands can do. Here's what you as a consumer can do. Let's talk about things like green energy. Like, this is the most efficient way to do this. Solar, if you're in these kinds of areas. If not, let's like build dams. Like, there are people who are actually trying to be like really smart and like, I don't know, take a strong methodological approach to this. And then you have people who like will just, like, was that Extinction Revolution or something? Like Extinction Rebellion? The hippies in London who were just kind of like...
with the fellow that was dancing?
Yeah, it's like, what is that? That's not useful activism, but anyway.
No, but it is entertaining.
Yeah, that's true. I'm just like, I'm glad that I didn't have to be one of those police officers there who was probably just like smelling a bunch of things. You have to keep a straight face.
Yeah, they probably had to take a shower when they got home.
Yeah, I would take several showers. Yeah. In any case, I think that's pretty much all the time we have left for today. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We hope to see you again next week at the same time. And if you are one of our live viewers, remember, stay on the stream because we are going to be back in just a few seconds with some exclusive Q&A. But in any case, we will see you next time.